Can you do like a little intro, couple words about yourself, and then a little bit about the company as well?
So I'm Anna Ribeiro, the creator and creative director of Pixelripped. And yeah, we are together with Avery. We focus on VR and mixed reality or immersive experience. So we have been in, I have been working VR for 10 years now. And I met Avery, and the Avery company had been like for 5 years in the industry. We're based in Brazil. And I partnered with them back in 2017, and then we released it together, Pixelripped 1989. And then the partnership has been going so well, and then we released it, Pixelripped 1995, in the middle of the pandemic. And now we are in the third episode, 1978. So yeah, it's going well.
So, can you do like a little intro
Sure.
about yourself and what do you do at Atari?
Sure. So my name is Ethan Stearns, and I'm the head of publishing for the games group at Atari. And I'm, you know, act in addition to just managing all of the publishing activities for our group, I also, you know, do a bit of executive producer work across all our games and interact with our developers like Arvory on the Pixelripped franchise.
So what is Atari up to these days, like especially in terms of gaming? Because this is such a huge brand with an incredible history. Tell all our listeners about like what's going on with it right now.
Yeah, so you know, we're really trying to come back into the PC and console market and bring great games out, games that like celebrate you know, the retro enthusiasts in all of us, the sort of we oftentimes think of ourselves as caretakers for the brand of Atari. We, you know, we've all come in here and we love Atari, and I think we love what Atari means to the industry, and so we're trying to do right by that and bring out a lot of cool games that are both like sometimes very classic in their connection to the IPs in the world of Atari, and then also games like Pixelripped that are doing something really new and innovative in story and in design, but are also still like love letters to that retro nostalgia that we all kind of have for video games. So, yeah, Atari is making games. That is what we're doing. You know, there are different parts of Atari that have business, and you know, we have some hardware that we do, and so we're making collectible Atari 2600 carts, and we have some licensing stuff that the company does, and yeah, so we're doing a bunch of different stuff. I focus on the games.
So tell me a little bit about the game that you're bringing to GDC this year, and what are these kind of like peculiarities that make it so unique?
So Pixelripped is a series, and this is the third episode we are releasing, and we released it. Every episode is about the history of gaming, and we like to say it's a love letter to the gaming industry. And we released a Pixelripped of 1989, which was about the Game Boy. So the release of the Game Boy was 1989. 1995 was about the 16-bit and Sega Genesis against Nintendo era. The PlayStation 1 was released. And 1978 is actually the first episode we go back in time, so everyone was expecting we go forward. In 1978 is the only episode we show the origins of the franchise, how Pixelripped, which is also the game, the name of the game inside our world, really matter. When Pixelripped was created, and it was inside Atari, so and this is the first episode we go back and show the origins, and it had to be with Atari. Also, because it's the third game, there's many things we wanted to do before we couldn't. There is a big feature we had to cut on the second episode, which was the ability to walk around and move as Dot in first person, have her powers. And we wanted to do this in 1995. We had to cut it out. The game was too big already. So the team was really sad because we had to cut this out. And it was actually good because when we started in 1978, we like, okay, this needs to be the main feature, because when we saw all the reviews of 1995, or most of the reviews are like positive, but they would have this comment, it's really good game, but I wish I could be Dot. I wish I could explore the world in first person, talk to NPCs, have a combat. And we all like, yes, we also wanted to. It was so frustrating. And then this was the main feature we had. And this became like the biggest difference of the game in comparison to the previous game, Pixel Rip games. Before, you would be passively inside the game world just as a cutscene moment. And now it's another game. Like, we also... Like, we're crazy. Like, we already had the platform game that you're playing inside the game and the VR world that you have to interact and deal with to complete that game. And now we're giving players the ability to go inside the 2D game in first-person 3D and then do things, combats, and then affect that world so you can go back to the real world and progress in the 2D game. It's really hard to explain.
Yeah, I'm going to have an opportunity to play a little bit, so hopefully I will.
Yeah, hopefully when you play, you understand. But that is many dimensions, and then we build one more. It's just, we felt like we had to do kind of like a twist and innovate, because it's the third episode, and okay, we didn't want to just do the same formula over and over, that you're playing a game and being distracted by humans and to complete that game. We wanted to make it bigger. And also something really good about it, this is the first time we're doing a partnership with a real company, with Atari, and we're able to actually make the game not just also feature and have Atari, you're inside Atari, not a fake company, and you have a 2600, but we are able to make a much bigger game. When we partnership, it was, we're in a year of development already, and we had cut out a lot of things from the game. And the game would be the same size of the previous episodes, around like 3 hours, 3 hours-ish. And when we partnership, we were able to add, make a much bigger game. And now we're around like 5 to 8 hours, depending on the player. So this is the biggest game we've done in the franchise. And I think this is also because of Atari. And it was really cool that they're super open for us to... be creative with the, have the freedom to use their IPs. We're like super worried. Like, can we broke the cartridge of Food Fight? Because I have this moment that the developer is fixing bugs in the game, and then a friend comes and like, could you fix this? And it's like Food Fight, and it's all full of bugs flying around, and you're hitting them, and you're playing Food Fight in the screen. So we kind of worry, like, can we break this? And it's super fun. Yeah, go for it. It's they respect it, that we also have our game design, and it's, and Pixelrip is not a historical book. It's Pixelrip didn't exist on Atari, and it's all about recreating that feeling of the era, but not being super accurate. Like, it was never like a historical lesson, and I think it was really cool that Atari was super open when respect our creativity, freedom.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favorite podcast platforms now.
So how does Atari work with game developers in terms of, like, how does your... You know, do you do rev share? When do you want to start working? Do you start working on when it's like almost finished, or like way early on? Like, do you bring in your producing capabilities? Do you help out in some way outside of just kind of like distribution and go to market?
Yeah, so I think it's a little of all the above what you mentioned. I mean, we're very much a traditional game publisher, so. Oftentimes that means that we're coming in with financing to help support the creation of the game. In addition, we provide a lot of other capabilities that allow the developers to focus on just making their game, so we can focus on the things that help, if it's localization or porting or QA or other services to help the game be finished so that the developers can focus on the things that they're doing. And then really our biggest job is dealing with distribution. So getting the game through all the different storefronts, doing the best we can to make sure that's the best looking product on those platforms it can be, as well as marketing and PR and other things we do to try to, you know, bring more eyeballs onto that game. So it's a very traditional, and then sort of the business of it is always different. It always kind of depends on different elements of what those games are. Sometimes we get games and they are further along. Like I had mentioned, they had been working on the game for a year when we started working on Pixel Rip with them. And we look at that as like a partnership in a lot of ways. Like we want to come in on the game with them. That's their game, and help them find success in that game, invest in their success for that game. And then we have other kind of titles sometimes where it's like, it's a PowerPoint deck or an idea that someone had on a napkin at a restaurant. And, you know, that'll be the kernel of the beginning of that idea. And then, of course, has to develop more into a structured project. So it kind of is all over the place. But we're just trying to find great creators who really love that nostalgia concept for, like, retro games, or that feel like they're part of the fabric of Atari games, and do what we can to support their success.
You've been in VR for a while now, right? So it's been like 10 years. How do you think this direction and area changed over the years? Has it become more kind of like there's more competition, less competition, more platforms, less platforms? Because probably VR train has been going for just as long as, 80 level has been going. And we've seen ups and downs and, you know, ups again. Like, where are we now in this journey?
I feel like if we compare to the mobile industry, there's an industry we know. I would say we are still waiting for the first iPhone. We are in that moment that it's kind of close. We know it's going to go well. I have Blueberry, all those phones, but we don't have that hit, massive adoption that we are expecting, like the iPhone had. So I feel like we are on that curve. We know VR is gonna stay. It's not like that moment in the beginning when we're like, it's like the Wild Wild West and we're like surviving the wave. Is this gonna actually last? And we had a lot of moments in the industry. There was this hype, overhype, like 2016 when the first Oculus was released, and then the hype was like kind of going down, and then we're kind of going through this phases. But I think after pandemic, especially after the Quest 2, we now finally have a market. We have been before like looking for investment and need investments to survive, but now we are finally in a moment that we have a market and we are okay with the project. We're actually like fine, and we established now with the company, with the projects, that we're not even like, oh yeah, it's like, yeah, we're here to stay. It's like finally the moment that we're like, yeah, we have a market, we have platforms, we have the industry is here. And before it was kind of like the Wild Wild West. It felt like the consoles were like kind of figuring out. So the first headsets, if you remember the Vive and the first Five and the first Oculus, and they all have like a kind of different controllers. So it was really hard to work with. We kind of have to like do different designs in the game for each platform, totally different controllers, buttons. Some we couldn't even make the game for because there was no joystick or no buttons, and we could actually port the game. So nowadays, we're finally in the moment that for developers, we had a much easier port between the platforms, because not just the engine like Unity and Unreal, they'll have this much easier ports for multiple platforms, but also the controllers itself, the hardware became really similar. You don't see much. I don't think it's a healthy path for any headset to create like a controller that's totally different from the other ones. So this is good. Like the port for the PlayStation, for example, the 1989, when we did the port, the game, it was like 2 months of work just to port the game to PlayStation. Things changed, the shaders, everything was pink. We had to update Unity. It was a nightmare. And this time when we ported to PlayStation, I was like, we need to be careful. This is going to be... I was so worried. And it took us like the first build we did was so smooth. The game was already all working. We had few bugs, but the port took like 1 week. And then we were kind of like together already just polishing the game. It was no surprise. And we're like, yes, finally, we made it. Now VR is finally working.
So you are working with Unity for the production of the title. What did you use this technology? What are the advantages? I understand that it's more like a more seamless porting, the one of that you mentioned, but maybe there are some other things that make Unity like a better fit, even for VR games in particular.
For us, we build 2D platform games too, and Unity is famous to be really good for 2D sprites, animations. You can do in Unreal, but Unity kind of has this really great support for 2D too. So this, in particular for Pixel Rift, is really good because we have to build many games. We build the 2D game and we build the VR world. Both Unreal and Unity are really good for VR, and I don't think that there will be a struggle. Also, Unity in the company, all developers are used to Unity, so that to go to Unreal would be a total big change in the company. We're actually studying Unreal too, but they make all the company use Unity nowadays, so it would be a big switch to do Unreal. I have been using Unity for like around 11 years. Yeah, 11 years, and most people in the company have been like years using. So we are. It's a platform that we feel comfortable and we know a lot, and there's a lot of people really like specialized in Unity. So I feel that's like one of the big reasons. I wouldn't say like Unity is better or Rio is better in VR for the platform, but for the game, there is no reason we would go for Unreal today. Like Unity is doing the job. We've done all the Pixel Rift franchise with Unity, and especially for the 2D game, I would say it's something that makes us stay with Unity too, because we have to build a separate game. It's not just one. It's like we actually have scenes separated for the 2D game. We could release that game separately. It's totally another game.
So tell me a little bit about distribution. You kind of touched a little bit on that, and especially distribution for VR titles.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Like, where do you go now? Like, what are the good platforms to start? How do you adapt your game for the platform, like in terms of screenshots, videos, and, you know, all the other elements that are required?
Well, I mean, Anna was touching on this earlier, and I think like it's true across every element of VR right now, we've evolved and we've matured quite dramatically in how we do all of those things. So, you know, years ago, you would launch a new VR game, and you know, porting it between platforms was very difficult. What platforms were the most successful? Where was the audience? Was changing years over year. And what we're seeing now is that there's a more unification of the platform types, so that we can go to Quest, the Meta Quest, and then also bring it to these other platforms pretty simply. There's still a developing market for the home console, so we're showing the game on PlayStation VR 2 today, and we really think that that's a cool platform where it's really accessible for lots of people. But then there's also a lot of people who are on Meta Quest. I mean, it's probably the biggest individual market for VR titles right now. But then we also have communities on Steam. People on Steam, people on HTC. There's Pico's doing a lot of stuff. So there are a lot of these platforms now. But what is making things a lot easier is that those platforms know it's better for them if, like, it's easier for us to bring the games across all of those spaces. Because, you know, even though it's a little bit more established, it's still, like, again, as Anna was saying, the iPhone proliferation of VR has not necessarily happened yet. And so we really still need to do our part to bring the game to as many of the VR enthusiasts across the different platforms as we can.
So I had these conversations with a lot of VCs last year, and they were saying that they were actually making a lot of money in VR, and it was a very successful kind of avenue for them.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about the numbers? Like, I know you're probably don't want
Man,
to
I don't say I don't really know. I wouldn't be a good person to give you those numbers, but I can tell you from where I was back in the day, where I remember having meetings with like Steam, and they would tell you how many titles on Steam, which was the main place to buy VR titles at the time, how many of those titles were able to break $1 million, or how many were able to sell 100,000 units. And it was so small compared to how much product was coming to market. And now you hear about it more and more from lots of different people, you know, that their game is able to break through. Studios are able to operate on their own revenue. They're not necessarily only surviving off of funding coming from VCs or other places. And I think it's, you know, someone once told me that you'll know VR is successful when people are not talking about it anymore. Meaning, like, people were very obsessed with talking about and investing in VR during a period of time. It was almost overhyped during that period. And it feels like now things have really settled in, and it's become more, it's an operating ecosystem now. It's still not as massive as the console market, but it's growing and becoming better. So I don't have any real numbers. You know, this is actually for Atari. This is kind of our first real big VR title. So after release, we'll probably have some more numbers to look at. But when we came into this with Arvory, it felt very much more safe of an opportunity for us to become financially involved in than a VR title would have been 3 years ago.
So how do you feel about? I know you're kind of like in the middle of this experience, and you're showing this game to everybody, and there's still sales to be had. But overall, do you feel like Atari would like to continue these experiments with VR? Where do you see VR in the next, let's say, 5-3 years? Do you feel like we're going to have kind of more of the same, kind of like a flat, and platforms are going to grow a little bit? Or is there an iPhone moment coming?
Again, I don't know. And the iPhone moment's been something that people have been talking about, like, since the beginning. And so to break that up into a couple different answers. One, Atari would love to continue to make VR. I think that one of the things I love about VR is it gives people who aren't traditionally gamers an opportunity to participate and interact with a game in a way that feels more intuitive and allows them to sort of break down the barriers in a lot of ways of like what a game controller is and allow them to like have an interactive, immersive experience. And I think that Atari actually, and a lot of our IPs are really about trying to get people to, and all people playing video games and having fun. And not many of our video games are very like obtuse or difficult to play. Our mantra in a lot of ways is like easy to pick up and play, difficult to master. And so that really blends well, I think, with VR and what VR has an opportunity to give a mass market. I am surprised all the time. I go to friends' houses and they have a Quest, and I'm like, I didn't know that you were a video game person. They're like, oh, we're not. Their kids play games on the iPad. They don't own a Switch. They don't own anything else, but they went and bought an Oculus or a Meta Quest. And I think that to me shows that the industry is kind of growing into that community of people who aren't traditionally gamers, but like to have that experience. And I think Atari in the past was able to really do that well in bringing video games and the ability to control your television into many, many homes. So it feels like a natural pairing that we want to continue to do. It has to be the right games, has to be the right developers we're working with, but yeah, we want to continue to do it.
Thanks for enjoying another episode of the 80 Level Roundtable podcast. Check out upcoming episodes on the 80 Level website at 80.lv. Join our career site at 80.lv/RFP. And share our podcast with friends and on your social networks.